You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ, Bucky, and Rhett with you on a Tuesday. And we have got a lot to get into today. Normally, you know, I'm fired up about the show. We've got some fun topics. This one is the best of the year because of what we were given by the college football gods last night to get into to those semifinal games, as well as looking back and looking ahead a little bit on the NFL side of things. But boys, it's great to see you. I want to jump right in. No happy talk at the top. I want to jump right in, and I want to start with the Rose Bowl, which was an incredible game. Michigan ends up coming back, beating Alabama in overtime. Rhett, I know you were at the game, so I'm going to let Bucky start. Go ahead, Buck. What'd you think?
Look, man, it was a great game, and I was conflicted because I love the way both teams go about their business. I love old school, hard nosed football. I love run game, defense, and all those things. And we got a chance to see all of that. To me, what was really impressive was the adjustments that coaches made throughout the course of the game to take this game into really like an overtime affair. It's one where Michigan came out. They were kind of dominating with their defense. Alabama makes an adjustment. They come back. Michigan, with under 4 minutes left, they put together a drive. They go for it on a fourth down with a clever little tactic where they get four strong, deliver it out to Blake Corum, and then J.J. McCarthy deals down the stretch. To me, I just think when you have great coaching matchups, you have great teams playing, you have the kind of game that we saw play out in the Rose Bowl. And so I couldn't be more excited as a guy who's really a college football fan.
So I just want to start with the fact that we talk and there is so much conversation about all that is wrong with college football and with college athletics now. You want to talk about NIL and transfer portal and playoff expansion and conference realignment. If you were out there in Pasadena yesterday underneath the crystal blue skies in 65 degree weather when this thing kicked off at the most iconic venue in all of college sports with 96,000 people in attendance, that is why we love college football. You could just sit there outside. So I was sitting there outside and watching everyone walk in front of that, you know, iconic entrance to the Rose Bowl, right? With the script Rose Bowl out there. And you could just watch their faces, right? And it was like, it was pure joy. And it was just, it was a sight, man. It was everything that we should be excited about and everything that we should celebrate about college football. Now, like once the game kicked off, I was shocked that Michigan was in this game to begin with based on all the mistakes they made early on. Like J.J. McCarthy was trying to give Alabama the football in the first play of the game. Then you had Samaj Morgan dropping the football, giving Alabama the first touchdown of the game. And I'm like, oh, boy, this is going to be a long day. Somehow Michigan's able to overcome that. And it was an ebb and flow. You got to deal with the swings of this game. And that's what college football should be about on that stage in the college football playoff. There were times where both teams went cold on offense and even on defense, but Michigan proved that I think they were the more physically dominant team for the majority of the game. And that showed at the very end, last drive of regulation for them, sending it to OT. And then the two-play drive in overtime was what Michigan football is all about. It's Blake Corum. It's power run game. It's him refusing to be denied DJ to get into the end zone. And then stuffing Jalen Milroe on fourth down.
Yeah, again, I did not love the play call there by Alabama at the end, but I want to start on the Michigan side of things. This felt like we all love the NCAA tournament as college basketball fans. Mm-hmm. Michigan felt like that team that had all the seniors. You know, you've got other teams that and maybe you have more talent. Now, I don't think Alabama had more talent than them in this game, but it felt like a hardened, experienced team that didn't panic when things got a little off with the special teams miscues that they had. They were able to recover, rebound. Fourth down, you're able to kind of slow everything down heartbeat-wise and just execute. It just felt like one of those college basketball teams that had been playing together for a long time. They did not get rattled there, and they found a way to win when really, to be honest with you, having watched a lot of Michigan, this was not their best. I mean, they've got a lot better game in them than what they displayed in this one. I'll give Alabama credit. You know, one of the things about Alabama is the adjustments that they made, you know, from what they got five sacks in the first half. And then they came out and said, you know what, we're going to run the ball, did a better job there. And I think they only gave one sack, I believe, in the second half. So they made some corrections there. But one of the things about them, Buck, it's like the little things in these games that you appreciate when the quarterback fumbles, when Milroe fumbles and it looked like, man, this is going to change the whole game. Alabama's defense goes right back out there, sudden change, and they just stand up and get a stop. I was like, man, this is for all the talk we use about, you know, mental or physical toughness. This both these teams incredibly mentally tough, which I thought was a good lesson for anybody.
Yeah, look, as a high school coach, I certainly took that away from it. DJ, the first part of you guys talk about Michigan kind of imploding at the beginning. I immediately tweeted like, man. Part of why Alabama wins so many of these games is they just wait for the other team to implode. Like, they typically don't beat themselves, and Michigan was doing a really good job of doing it. J.J. McCarthy appears to throw an interception the first play. It's overruled. The special teams gaffes that you guys alluded to, and that doesn't even include at the very end of the game where the guy muffs the punt. It dribbles back to the one-yard line. He picks it up, and luckily he didn't fumble.
Because well, how many times have you seen
someone muff it, pick it up? And like all of that stuff. And so to me, look, man, when you have young people and you're playing and coaching and all of that stuff, I think it's great. But I want to kind of talk about like Michigan and staying true to the identity. Right. So for all of us who have watched Jim Harbaugh kind of make his trek, his coaching trek from USD to Stanford to the 49ers to now Michigan, we've always known that he is a power football guy, but he's also a guy who does it in a very creative fashion using unbalanced lines and all those things. The two biggest plays that Michigan had, they used some form of unbalance to create the advantage. First on fourth and two, when they line up in trips and a snug bunch, they have Blake Corum on the left, but then they kind of bounce motion him to the right to create what we call four strong, meaning four eligibles out to the strong side. For a team like Alabama that likes to switch everything off, you normally don't include the fourth guy into the mix. So when Blake Corum goes into the flat, that's why he's uncovered. So I was like, hey, that's Jim Harbaugh being Jim Harbaugh. In overtime, the touchdown when we talk about Blake Corum, they line up, and I still haven't heard anybody talk about this. They line up four to the left strong. They have a guard and a tackle and a wing. They motion the wing to the left to create five strong. Alabama never adjusts. They then run a power to put six over there. So when Blake Corum runs, from a numerical standpoint, they have a huge advantage. And I'm just like, man, this is, I've seen Toby Gerhart do this. I've seen everybody that Jim Harbaugh has coached has run this power play over and over and over again. I mean, and I'm like, man, hats off to him for keeping it real. I appreciate that about him, just like I appreciate what Nick Saban was able to do with a team that now that we can reflect on it. Look, this team wasn't one of the four best teams. They deserve to be in the playoffs because they knocked off Georgia. But they overachieved with what they have, because if you look at this team compared to old Alabama teams, they didn't really have a dynamic threat on the perimeter. The quarterback was a runner, not a thrower. Offensive and defensive lines are not necessarily dominant like they used to, but he got them there. So I can appreciate the work that he did to get them to this point.
So a couple of things here on what you mentioned about the schematic advantages that Michigan was creating there. That's what they've done all year long, especially in big games. They are one of the more schematically and competitively arrogant teams out there. Like, they will overload one side like you're talking about and run it right there, right? And challenge you to stop them and challenge you to make the adjustments, right? They don't care if they, I mean, like, you, six to the left, to six to the strong side, fine. We're still going to run to the strong side. Like, you think we're going to run to the strong side? You better believe we are. Stop us. Like, and that's what they did all year long. I had that in my notes from rewatching a Penn State and the Ohio State game. Obviously, you know what happened in the second half of the Penn State game there. Just decided that we were going to be the better and more physically dominant team. And they were when it mattered. A couple of things I was disappointed with. Like, I really thought that Dallas Turner and Braswell were going to create more havoc in this game than they did, especially on a Michigan tackles. Like, I thought Michigan was a little bit stronger in the interior and that they might have some weakness there on the edge. Those edge rushers for Alabama were minimized. Now, J.J. McCarthy didn't sit back there and have too many classic drop back throws, which, again, credit to the game plan, right? You know, that's probably not an area where you're going to be in advantageous situations. And so they minimized it and they ran a ball when they needed to. And, you know, the other thing, I didn't think Latham played his best game at right tackle for Alabama either. I thought the Michigan edge rushers played their best game of the season. McGregor in particular had a couple of the sacks, and then that front, like, Mason Graham's going to be a dude. Chris Jenkins is a dude. I mean, they rotate four or five deep in that defensive tackle group. And it's just, they are strong, and they were the more physically dominant team up front on both sides of the ball for the majority of the games each.
Yeah, no doubt. We'll wrap it up with this. Just kind of summarize what you guys are talking about and what we're saying here. I remember when Harbaugh first got to Stanford and going up there on visits. And I remember at that time, many, many, many years ago, hearing the phrase for the first time, intellectual brutality. And that's what it is. They are not only physical, they're incredibly smart. And that extends not just from the coaches, but to the players. They get guys that can handle all this that they're giving to them. So that's been their philosophy. And then defensively, I tweeted this out during the game, and we've talked about it on the show before. The Michigan defense, the Baltimore defense, and we'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. They're going to be mimicked. Mm-hmm. They're going to be copied. They're going to be plucked in terms of people trying to get those guys. We'll go a little bit deeper, dive on that a little bit later. They're going to be facing a different opponent, though, a different style of opponent, and a much more lethal passing attack this coming week, because Washington kind of put on display, Buck, what they were against Texas, which was really, if you know, the game ended up being close. It didn't feel close until the very end with kind of a weird scenario that took place at the end of this ball game. But if not for a turnover on downs, it felt like they were a good 14, 17 points better than Texas watching that ball game.
Yeah, look, man, UW has answered the bell numerous times. I just remember the Pac-12 title game, even though they had knocked off Oregon before, everyone was saying Oregon's the better team, and they knocked them off again. And what I can appreciate about UW is, man, they are explosive and dynamic on offense. But in spite of all the flash and the pizzazz and all that, it's a hard-nosed, grizzled team at the end of it. You think about the number of close games that this team has been in and won, how they've been able to battle back through all the adversity. Them being able to stand up in that situation at the end of the game where, look, a injury and a clock snafu kind of puts them in a situation where they're having to defend the field against more time, and the ball is at the 12-yard line with a couple snaps to go, and they're able to stand up. To me, man, you talk about a team that has an unbreakable, undeniable spirit. That's what UW has, and you're right. Michigan is facing a different animal because the speed on the outside, the playmakers, and the skill on the outside, particularly on UW's offense, is going to be a challenge for Michigan. I mean, it's a great matchup that I can't wait to see.
So, full disclosure, I was on my way home from the Rose Bowl, was listening to the game the first half on the radio.
Oh, my gosh.
Ended up calling DJ, and we were just talking about some of the things we saw in the Rose Bowl, and he was kind of giving me the play-by-play of some of the stuff that Michael Penix was doing in this game. And I went back home and watched the second half with Kane on the couch, and, I mean, there were times when we were talking about something that wasn't happening in the game. And like, I'd watch Michael Penix make a throw and like, you just get up off your seat for a second. You're like, come on. Like that throw to McMillan in the end zone for the touchdown in the second half, a 25-yard frozen rope. Like, come on. Like that stuff.
Dart.
So here's the thing that here's the thing that kind of kept coming back to me, because DJ and I were talking about, you know, like, all right, you know, Penix isn't the most mobile guy out there, right? Maybe he looks a little stiff, but he can move around pretty well in the pocket. And sure enough, we get into the second half and they start going QB design run.
He starts running.
I'm like, and like effectively, now the slides were a little awkward. We'll work on that. But doesn't this kind of ring to you guys a little bit like the conversation around CJ Stroud last year? Like, without question, was the most talented, you know, passer in the draft, right? And everyone's like, well, he's a little, you know, doesn't really move around all that much, doesn't really have that mobility. But he had enough, right? He had enough, and he showcased it a couple of different times, including in the college football playoff. And so I think that's kind of what Michael Penix did, because I'm telling you right now, his accuracy and the way that ball gets from point A to point B, well, that's second to none for me right now in these quarterbacks that are going to be coming out.
Yeah, and you know, going through that conversation, I was telling Rhett that this evaluation is all medical. I mean, to me, I haven't been able to generate as much support around the league, and maybe that'll change as we go through this this next week here. But I really like him. I gave him a good grade, and then you talk to folks around the league, and they maybe weren't quite as high on him. And some of the things we were talking about here, you know, he's stiff. I don't know, he can create, make things happen. And then really, he's one knee injury away from not, you know, you're not missing a year. It could be, you know, more serious than that when you've had a couple ACLs. So the medical thing, that's another conversation we'll have as we get closer to the draft. It'll be different by team. Some, I think, will be more positive about it than others. But man, there's no denying how the ball jumps out of his hand. I mean, it explodes out of his hand, and he is accurate driving the ball, layering the ball, throwing the ball deep. And that is similar to Stroud from that standpoint. Now, the one thing that Stroud had is Stroud had durability and health. He had that box checked. So that's, you know, that's going to be one of the deciding factors there. But man, he can absolutely rip it. And I know one thing, Buck, I said last week, we did our discussion on wideouts, and I said, and a lot of people kind of, you know, gave me the raised eyebrow. I said, I gave Romo Dunes the same grade that I gave Marvin Harrison Jr. And look at him last night, man. Like, everything you want to do, you want to run routes, you want to get on top of coverage, you want contested catches. Oh, one of the things that we didn't even mention on that pod, if you go back and calculate all the pass interference that he draws, you'd stack those yards on top of his ledger. It'd be even more impressive. Obviously, in college, you get the 15. In the NFL, these are big, big yardage plays, because he does a great job of fighting to get to the football. But man, they're stacked on the outside. You know, the funny thing to me is when you watch them line up, their center, I think it's 275 pounds at Washington. And those Texas, you know, their DTs are massive. And I'm sitting there going, okay, well, Michigan, you know, maybe Michigan will move them around and push them around a little bit along that front. But I don't know, when you're throwing swings and moving the pocket, they do a pretty good job of navigating around maybe some issues they might have on the inside. On the outside, they're in great shape. The left tackle is a first-round pick. He's a great player. But I'm fascinated to see what this looks like in the next matchup. Real quick, if we just go around the horn, the key in the championship game, what you think is going to decide this thing?
Well, for me, it's Michigan controlling the ball. I think it's ball possession. I think this has to be one where the running game keeps the ball away from UW. We've seen UW is explosive. They can, look, a point a minute. The way they're going. So I want to play keep away from Michael Penix. That means running the football, controlling it, and really limiting the possessions that they'd have. This has to be one where we're playing half-court basketball for Michigan. We don't want to get in a fast break shootout against UW.
Look, I think this is going to come down to Michigan secondary, and they were more than up to the task, and wasn't sure that was going to be the case with Isaiah Bond and Burton and the crew that Alabama could throw at you. And they didn't really have to as much because their edge rushers and that pressure was getting to Jalen Milroe. They got to get to Michael Penix, and then Will Johnson's got to play the game of his life at corner for Michigan. You know, whether he's on Roma Dunze or McMillan or Polk or whichever one, but like that whole crew in the secondary, Mikey Samer still, that whole group, like they've got to have their best game like of their lives to keep up with this Washington passing attack and allow Michigan to then control the game on the ground, DJ.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's the most elementary thing. It's going to be tackling. And I think that tackling is going to be on the perimeter for Michigan's defense. Can they get those big receivers on the ground who, by the way, block their tails off? In a year where we've talked about the George Pickens thing and maybe not giving the most effort in the run game, man, you want to help your run game. Those wideouts from Washington all block. big time. So can they tackle on the perimeter for Michigan? And then on the other side, can Washington slow down the run game? Can they tackle and be able to stop that charge they're going to see from Blake Corum in the Michigan run game? So it's going to be fun. We'll do a little deeper dive on that matchup a little bit later on in the week. But, man, I cannot wait for next week to get here. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will switch gears. We'll get to the NFL, looking at some of the games from this past week.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, let's change gears here. Let's get to the NFL and some of the things we saw last week and what they mean going forward. I think we can start, first of all, with that Cowboys win over the Lions. Guys, plenty's been said, plenty's been made of the two-point conversion fiasco, the number reporting situation. I mean, look, it is what it is. It's been covered every which way. But I do think on the Cowboys side of things, so much of the conversation, Rhett, was on the Lions and them kind of getting screwed at the end of this game, that I think we kind of lost track of. This is a good win for the Cowboys, and this is a Cowboys offense running through CeeDee Lamb right now. That, man, you talk about, that's a horse you can ride deep into the postseason, the way that CeeDee Lamb is rolling right now. Reminds me a little bit of the Fitzgerald run during the Super Bowl with Kurt Warner. Mm-hmm. You remember that? Which, like, nobody could cover him.
Good one.
That's what it good feels one. Like when you're watching CeeDee Lamb right now.
I feel like I want to know what that 88 Club group text is like right now. You know, with Irv and the whole crew. Like, I feel like that thing is kind of blown up, right, over the course of the last 8 weeks, with the way CD has absolutely gone off, in particular since that 49ers game where the Cowboys took that big L. I mean, like, he's kind of uncoverable right now. And it's really fun to watch, like, what this offense can be like when you've got one of those elite weapons out there. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's going to break, you know, who's breaking Cowboys, you know, franchise records here. And we talk about guys that wear that number and play that position for that franchise. It does mean something, just a little bit more. And I think he's done a great job of kind of understanding expectation and thriving in the midst of all that pressure and that anxiety that comes with being one of those guys that is depended on for this team, Bucky. And I think, you know, it's I think it's one of those things that could fuel this team on a playoff run when you have a guy that's playing this well.
Look, man, you talk about fueling a playoff run. A couple of things happen. Like, we could talk about the officiating errors and how it played out and how the Cowboys won that game. But the Philadelphia Eagles falling apart and allowing the Dallas Cowboys to win and claim the division and the number two seed, that gives them a pathway to the Super Bowl. This team plays significantly better at home. They're averaging 37, almost 38 points per game. There's almost a 22-point differential between points scored and points allowed when they play at home. So to give this team an opportunity to play at home in front of their fans where their offense can get going. We've seen Dak Prescott light it up at home. We've seen their defense rely on the crowd noise to be able to heat up that pass rush and create turnovers. This team is well positioned to make that deep postseason run that everyone has talked about for years. And when I'm looking at Dak Prescott and the connection that he has with Mike McCarthy and how they're really running it through number four via 88, look, it's a tough team. And the only thing to me that can trip this team up is their inability to run it when they need to run it. Their inability to run it to close out games. Tony Pollard and crew, like, they still have to be able to run the game out because you don't want to see issues that affected them at the end of the game when they throw on second down and the other team doesn't have timeouts and it's an incomplete pass and you allow the Detroit Lions to be able to get back into it. Game management, running the football in critical situations. Cowboys need to work on that this final week or so as they get ready for the postseason.
Yeah, one thing positive on the Lions side of things, if you're going to get kind of screwed over a little bit, much rather have it happen in the regular season than in the postseason. And as Dan Campbell said, Control Fury, that's going to be the name of a lot of fantasy teams next year. Controlled Fury there for the Detroit Lions. So they've got a chance. Everything's still out in front of them. They can bottle up all that energy, maybe a couple more ventis with a couple more shots. And they'll be ready to go once we get to the postseason. So I know it's they don't want, Lions fans don't want to hear. I know they're upset about it, but they're still a very dangerous team in the mix in the NFC. Get over the AFC. Buck, Ravens, Dolphins. The Ravens have the number one seed. We'll get to their side of things in a second here. But Miami, shorthanded a little bit in this game, and man, they came out of it hurting as well. They lose Chubb. So when you look now at their defensive front and what it looked like, you know, 6 weeks ago. To what it looks like now with the injuries that they've suffered with both their edge rushers. Man, it's hard to feel great about Miami going, you know, not only into this week against Buffalo, but into the tournament now with what they're missing up front.
It puts more pressure on the offense. I think now they have to try and figure out a way they can turn every game into a shootout. Before, they could think about maybe adopting a complimentary style against some of the opponents that they played against. Now, this has to be Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, trying to see if they can get to 40 points each and every week. That means a little more risk-taking, a little edginess in terms of being aggressive as a play caller. They have to approach the game each week. Hey, we got to outscore our opponent because defensively, they just don't have the personnel to be able to do it. When you lose Bradley Chubb and you've already lost Jalen Phillips, you've lost your ability to really get after the passer. You have Xavien Howard who's nursing an injury. It's just a shell of what they thought they were going to have available getting into the postseason. So defensively, you can't depend on that part of it. It has to be an offensive led situation in the postseason. That means Mike McDaniels, he has to be on his P's and Q's to make sure this offense can get up and going. Puts a lot more pressure on Tua Tagovailoa.
Look, this is a team that's actually, you know, has had their fair share of injuries, you know, throughout the year, even on the offensive side. I mean, Teron Armstead has been in and mostly out of the lineup at left tackle. Connor Williams missed a bunch of games at center. Raheem Mostert was down this game. And I think Raheem Mostert is a huge part of this offense. And, you know, obviously with the touchdowns that he scored is, you know, he's on an epic run this year. But missing him, you know, not having him in the fold last week did hurt. It felt like in Devon Achane, you know, did have a touchdown in the second half Waddle. As they tried to kickstart. Yeah, Waddle being down. I mean, like it makes a difference because I think part of what makes this offense so great is that you have to deal with so many different options, right? And that's why we see Tyreek get off so many different times and why you see Mostert find success in the run game too, because, you know, you've got when you have that full complement, it is so hard to defend. So I do think health plays a big role ultimately in what this Miami Dolphins team is going to be able to accomplish this year.
And no doubt. See if they can get healthy going into this week as well as into the postseason, if they can still be a dangerous team that we thought they would be going back a month ago. Let's switch gears here. We want to talk about the Ravens here. And if you look at the leaders in the league in sacks, not a surprise. The Baltimore Ravens are right there at the top of the list, followed by some potential playoff teams here. Obviously, the Chiefs are in, Dolphins are in. We'll see with the Bills and Colts. But again, it's not a surprise. We always talk about quarterback play and pass rush as being the two key ingredients to championship football at this time of year. And Buck, when you look at the Ravens, how they've done it, I hinted at this earlier. When you look at how they play and you look at how Michigan plays at the college level, This is a brand of defense that's going to be copied in the copycat world that we live in. They're going to get cherry-picked off both of those staffs as teams try and implement this. What is it that stands out to you when you watch this Ravens defense and pass rush?
DJ, is something that all of us have talked about for the last few years is positionless football. Like, we've talked about taking a set of athletes that have interchangeable skills and putting them together on a defense and being able to match it with any and every style that you could possibly face. When I look at the Baltimore Ravens and I look at the pieces that they have in place from up front with Calvin Noy being versatile, Madubuike being a versatile impact player on the inside, Jadeveon Clowney. Then you go to the second level where you have Patrick Queen and Roquan Smith, who are both fast. Kyle Hamilton, who's a hybrid linebacker safety. Geno Stone being able to play in the back end. They have a bunch of different guys that can give you contributions as rushers, as playmakers. As I'm thinking about how the football continues, the game continues to advance, I think you're going to see more teams who have those height, weight, speed athletes that have diverse toolboxes that are able to do a bunch of different things. And then you just need to have the mastermind that can put it together. It's fun to watch the Ravens play, and on the heels of the Ravens and Michigan, the success that they're having basically using the same scheme, you absolutely can bank on other teams trying to copy and mimic what they're doing.
You know, and I love that look at it from the scheme perspective. I'd also look at it from, you know, what we cover a bunch here on Move the Sticks from the roster construction standpoint here. I don't know that we talk about development enough, you know, in this league. Draft and develop, right? And understand what your team needs and how your coordinators and your head coach are going to utilize the pieces that you give them as a personnel, you know, operation. And I think it, particularly on defense, that this group, you know, with Eric DaCosta, understands what John Harbaugh and what Mike McDonald, what that whole crew want and need to be successful. And then understand that, you know, they're going to give them some guys that if they get developed properly, are going to turn into stars. Like, how many times have we talked about Brandon Stevens this year? Guy who's played over 1,000 snaps at corner, third round pick out of SMU 2 years ago. How about what Geno Stone has done as a seventh round pick out of Iowa? Second leading interception guy in the league right now with 7. He is having an absolute breakout year. He's played over 900 snaps. And is a ball hawk back there. And then obviously Kyle Hamilton gives you the chess piece, right? That Bucky that you're talking about. But how about consistency too? We're just talking about the Dolphins and health. Patrick Queen and Roquan Smith. Like, Queen has played 1,069 snaps and Roquan has played 1,066 snaps. How many teams can say that about that inside off the ball linebacker pairing that plays such a big role in what this defense ultimately does? And then obviously Madubuike is having, you know, his best year. So like, you're seeing guys develop, and obviously these are guys that have been drafted into this and have been brought in, you know, through a variety of different ways to fill needs in specific roles. Like, look at Kyle Van Noy. We've talked about that a bunch, like utilizing all avenues to find the best players for your defense, DJ.
Yeah. Also, Michael Pierce is about 370 pounds in the middle of that defense. So you can do a lot of different things when you've got somebody that can eat up as much space as he does, not to mention getting him on undersized center and letting him walk them back to the quarterback. Our buddy Dan Orlovsky used the phrase, the spine of the defense. We always talk about building up the middle. We've talked about it forever on here. Bucky referenced it earlier. But it's really kind of that spine. They are sturdy and strong in the middle of the field, and that works not only against the run but against the pass. And you've got linebackers that you better be able to cover. And it reminds me a little bit with them, and this will get us to the 49ers here. When we talk about the importance of off-the-ball linebackers, and both these organizations believe in it, I think this Ravens off-the-ball linebacker group kind of reminds me of that Navarro Bowman. Am I drawing a blank here on the Pat Willis?
Patrick Willis.
Yeah, that duo that they had. That is very similar with how those guys play, because you don't have to take them off the field. They can stay out there and cover. You want to stay out there and passing downs? No problem. They can both run and cover all day long. Backs, tight ends, getting vertical down the field, can still find and play the ball. That's one of the things that stands out. And obviously, as we get to the 49ers here, a team that's locked up the number one seed in the other conference, another defense, Rhett, that's built right up the middle with the strength that they have, and a team that I think the Ravens and the 49ers, what makes them the number one seed is that they can play in a variety of games. You want to get in a bloodbath, they're fine doing that. You want to get in a shootout, I think there's enough ammunition offensively, they can do that as well.
Yeah, sure. And looking at what the 49ers have done, I think, you know, for so long, we've talked about the depth up front, right? The depth that pass, the ways they can rotate guys through along the defensive line and create havoc there. And obviously, we were just talking about the off the ball backers for the Ravens. You know, you got a dang good pair there in San Francisco as well with Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw. But I think more so this year than in recent years, they've developed, obviously they signed and or drafted and developed some really good cornerbacks now. Treverius Ward's playing some really good football. Diamador Lenore has come in and made some big plays for this team at times. You go back to last week, I think each one of them had a pick. I feel like they're better equipped in the secondary this year than maybe they have been in recent years to match what they do, Bucky, up front.
Yeah, no, they absolutely are equipped. And they're doing it a little differently with Steve Wilks in the fold, a little more quarters. They use some man-to-man. They've done some different things. I think the bigger lesson that we all can take in looking at the way these two teams are constructed, one, we always talk about line play being essential. We always talk about defensive and offensive fronts, being able to control the trenches. So that stands out. The other thing, DJ, you talked about being strong right down the middle. When you look at a time when teams are not investing in linebackers, we talk about, oh, you can't take an off-the-ball linebacker early. Oh, you don't want to pay off-the-ball linebackers. We're seeing two teams that are built on playing bully ball, playing with physicality, toughness, dominating the middle of the field. They're willing to invest in those positions. And so I know sometimes we can get cute as we're trying to study how to build teams and where we can kind of cut and maybe you can win in the margins. I think the Ravens and the Niners are showing us that a old school football still wins, and not necessarily stylistically, but old school in terms of the way you construct your team. You better have some guys that can run, hit, cover, that can enforce, and they can play different styles and impose their wills on the opponent. I think you're seeing both of those guys, and a lot of it is because at the second level, they have athletes who are really instinctive and physical football players, and those guys are able to change the game.
Yeah, no doubt. Those teams, you know, no secret that they're both holding down the number one seeds with the Ravens and the 49ers, teams that are built similarly. They met up once. It went the Ravens' way in a strong fashion. Maybe they're going to meet up again in Las Vegas. We will wait and see. All right, well, that is going to do it for today. Again, Ravens and the 49ers doing things the right way. I think we can all agree on that one. This has been a fun episode. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. We will be back tomorrow with a brand new episode of Move the Sticks. We'll see you then.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.